You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Tuesday, January 11th, 2022. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, U.S. breaking the hospitalization records as more and more evidence mounts that vaccination may be our only way from pandemic to endemic. Also on the program today, Joe Biden backs the filibuster carve-out for voting rights. But voting rights activists are not impressed. Russia and the U.S. negotiate over NATO expansion. Maine governor vetoes a bill to allow farm workers to unionize as Starbucks in Buffalo votes to join a union. Landlord of the Bronx building, where fire and smoke inhalation killed 17, had been cited multiple times for safety violations. Meanwhile, Jim Jordan ignores a congressional subpoena as Mike Pence's toes are starting to get a little chilly, as in cold feet. U.S. pledges more aid to Afghanistan, but Afghani funds still frozen. Last year was the Earth's fifth hottest on record, as was seven of the last seven. New York and California look to expand health care, and a federal lawsuit alleges that elite colleges are price-fixing when it comes to financial aid.
No.
All this and more on today's program. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so much for joining us. Joining me, as always, is Emma Vigeland. Emma, let me first apologize for what's going on with my hair. Obviously, it's freezing cold here. I wore a hat, and it made all my hair essentially congregate on the top of my head.
I heard you wore a hood.
Well, hood and a hat.
A hood sounds a little bit like sinister.
I wore a hood.
Yeah.
And a hat.
I guess only with you, though.
It's turned Sam's hair into the MC Escher.
And then I was trying to fix it as I was looking into the Zoom, and the Zoom, it's worse than looking into a mirror how it's reversed. It's like quadruple reversed.
Right. It's just interesting how it's kind of bunched on the top, and it looks fake.
It looks like I'm wearing a wig.
It looks like a toupee, perhaps.
Like a toupee.
Yeah, I mean, who knows?
I mean, just eventually I will get there.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of time, but at this moment, no, I'm not.
You're not just going to go full bald? If I lose my hair, I'm shaving it. I would look forward to it, honestly.
Oh, I'm definitely already sized out the toupee. Probably get the toupee going. Yeah, no. Look, it really helped Frank Luntz's career. That guy took off.
Whew.
Yeah.
I mean, I have no problems.
That's some other adjustments.
I used to refer to him, somebody the other day reminded me that I used to refer to him as the ethically and follically challenged Frank Luntz.
I did not know that he had a toupee.
Oh, yeah, for years. Years and years.
Ah.
Yep.
The climate changed on his head. Move on!
Thanks for joining us, ladies and gentlemen. It is the 20-year anniversary, if you can believe it, for Guantanamo Bay. Guantanamo Bay, or I should say, the Guantanamo Bay prison.
The first prisoner's arrival.
In Guantanamo Bay. Guantanamo Bay is a base on the island of Cuba that America has retained control over this military base. The base obviously existed prior to 2002, January 2002, when George W. Bush started bringing prisoners there from Afghanistan so that they would be ostensibly outside the auspices of the U.S. Constitution in the way that we could torture them and hold them without any charges and in this sort of like extrajudicial, which is a sort of a nice way of saying illegal,
right?
Way. And there are still 39 prisoners there. There were 800 at its peak. 13 of those 39 have already been cleared. The other 26, I mean, there's never been much evidence for any of against any of these people. What happened was we put bounties up for supposed Al-Qaeda folks in Afghanistan. There are people there who are not who were apprehended in other places besides Afghanistan. And what ended up happening was people wanted the bounty. And so if they had a problem with somebody in their in a rival village or within their village or in a rival tribe or someone that they stumbled upon, they would basically hand them over for a bounty, get paid, and then the U.S., you know, years after it tortured these people, realized like, ooh, how are we going to get away with, you know, releasing them without having any responsibility for them?
Or without creating new terrorists in the eyes of the United States government, people who might actually have, I mean, among the many valid reasons people would be angry at the United States, I don't know, imprisoning and torturing somebody for a crime they did not commit might create some friction.
Yeah, a little bit. Joe Biden has promised to close Guantanamo Bay, but there is been no evidence of that. And apparently there's a new secret courtroom that is being built. So happy Guantanamo Bay. And just, you know, for those people who think that Donald Trump was somehow an innovation of the Republican Party, I want to remind you that for maybe it was a full decade, Rush Limbaugh, who was the intellectual pillar of the Republican Party. You'll remember that there was no Republicans complaining when Donald Trump gave him the Medal of Freedom or whatever it was that he gave him. And for years, you know, we saw Ted Cruz grovel to Tucker Carlson. For years, every single Republican would grovel at the feet of Rush Limbaugh. Rush Limbaugh was selling merch about how mocking the idea of Guantanamo Bay being anything other than basically a vacation spot for terrorists. I mean, just sick stuff. So make no mistake about it. The Republican Party, Donald Trump did not change the Republican Party. Donald Trump found a home in the Republican Party. And that's about it. He just moved in. I said this over and over again prior to him even winning the presidency or the primary. The Republican Party spent the past couple of decades constructing a suit, and it fit Donald Trump perfectly. And that was the only, that's really the only dynamic between those two.
I found the Club Gitmo t-shirt, the merchandise.
Go ahead, pop that up. I mean, they Rush Limbaugh made, I mean, there wasn't just a t-shirt. I mean, it was a full-on feature of the program.
What, like some sort of Sandals Resort kind of joke?
Oh, yeah.
That's hilarious.
And then you also had, I mean, you had every right-wing commentary guy, you know, pretending like, oh, I've just been waterboarded. It's no big deal.
Right, yeah.
That was the staple of their programming. Let's first start with just this clip of Jen Psaki. Chicago teachers are apparently returning. I don't know if they're returning today or tomorrow, because they are now satisfied that the Chicago Well, they were prepared to teach remotely since last week. Chicago schools wanted to basically discipline the teachers in some way and say, no, you need to come in regardless of what's going on. And just to give you a sense of what's going on, my son has not had anything other than a substitute teacher since he's returned from Christmas break. His principal was out with COVID. His teacher's out with COVID. Other teachers out with COVID. I don't know that he's had more than half of his classmates in class since the beginning of school. I will tell you what. My son came to me today. He goes like, ask me if I did my homework. Did you do your homework? No. Why didn't you do your homework? I didn't get any. No. I haven't had any for days. I haven't had any for days. Because he's half the students are gone. The substitute teacher is there. I mean, I think the socialization is great. It creates a certain amount of anxiety amongst him and others because, of course, we are all aware of what's going on. We are deluding ourselves if we're telling ourselves that this is a period, particularly right now, these couple of weeks, is a period where we're educating our students. We are housing our students. For people who need to go to work, for people who don't want to deal with their kids at home, or they can't. But let's not kid ourselves to what's going on.
But the fiction is necessary for like the exact people who need the adults who have children, their workers, to have their kids in school. So this can be a much smoother ride for people.
And the fact is, there could have been, and there are school, I know like upstate New York, I know there's at least a couple of school districts who are basically saying like, it's not a question of should we do remote or not do remote. There's simply not the staff because teachers are no more immune to catching COVID than anybody else. In fact, they are more likely to catch COVID because they're surrounded by 20 or 30 kids. Here is Jen Psaki at the White House maintaining this fiction that this is all about having schools function safely as opposed to like having schools function.
The president said yesterday he wants schools to be open. We know they can be open safely, and we're here to help make that happen. And he agrees with medical, scientific, and education experts that because of the historic work we've done, we are more than equipped to ensure schools are open. And we're going to keep our children and educators who selflessly serve their community safe, but ensure that children are not enduring the mental health impact of not being in school, that there are not gaps in learning. This includes schools everywhere, including in Chicago.
First off, there are gaps in learning. That is going to happen. It's inevitable. The real question is, like, can you actually operate a school if 20%, 30% of your workforce is out? I mean, this is the thing that's just ridiculous. Like, we're all just pretending that this is just, there's no difference between these 2 weeks and 2 weeks from September or any random 2 weeks from October. It's just not the case. It's just simply not the case.
And it's just like another example of the way the Biden administration has approached this Omicron wave in a fairly indistinguishable way from how the Trump administration initially responded, where they were like, lockdowns, the mental health toll that it's going to take on human beings and on kids and in people here. Like, that's why we can't lock down. That might be worse than the flu-like disease that you're going to get. Like, basically, the Biden administration's plan was vaccines and then let's pretend like nothing's happening here.
I mean, you're going to get the only difference. The only difference is that we know the rate of hospitalization and the rates of death are lower than they were at this time in 2020.
Yeah.
Or I should say, March 2020. But the fact of the matter, people are still getting sick. And you don't want people, sick people going into school and infecting other people because you want to minimize the spread to the extent that you can. And if and you know, everyone believes, not everyone, but I think the vast majority of people believe that this Omicron wave is going to be shorter than the others because it's burning so quickly through people. You come up with a sort of a plan B. And, you know, it's not just the Biden administration. I mean, you know, Eric Adams, the whole, it's just sort of like there's this mass delusion. And then all these people are sitting there, you know, the commentariat are sitting there basically pretending as if, well, it's no big deal. Yet they're all in their own separate home studios.
Thank you, David Axelrod.
I don't remember seeing articles saying thousands of commentators have died from COVID over the course of this pandemic.
Well, of course not, because they're going to be. But the point is, you know, this is. I made that comment with Axelrod on Twitter, and people are like, "Well, you don't see the difference between teaching our kids and political commentators." Well, I do. How about society recognizing that? Because that political commentator is making about 12 times what the teacher's making. And if the teacher's so important to our society, maybe as a society, we should act like it and say they're not so expendable.
Except for Jen Psaki did say that she valued them, but
I love this idea of like, they're selflessly going back in. Well, wait a second. Why should teachers be selfless? And how does that benefit society that we're risking the people who we think are so valuable to our society that we're the people who should be going in right now are the political commentators.
The reason they call
we can
them,
afford to lose a couple columns.
The reason they call them valuable is because they see them as willing to take a sacrifice for society by not getting paid and by potentially contracting COVID. And they're happy that they're doing that instead of the rest of the population having to do so.
They're so valuable that we need Reagan to do what he did to the air traffic controllers to them.
Right. They're that valuable. Just a reminder, it's your support that makes this show possible. You can become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. Also, you can buy some merch, shop.majorityreportradio.com. And a reminder of the Big Live Show is no longer on the on the anniversary of January 16th. Well, that's not.
It's going to be May.
Yeah, May 15th. I don't know. People from Find Out Majority Life. Joe Biden has come out. This is extraordinary. A year into his presidency, when it appears that his Build Back Better agenda is completely dead on, well, I want to say dead on arrival, except for it's been arrived for 8 months. Mm. And it's now finally dead. The master of the Senate. What were they calling him before? Did he have any nickname? 50 years in the Senate. I'll tell you something. If I worked somewhere at 50 years, I would try and figure out how the place worked. But apparently he didn't. And he thought this was still an era where it was very important to bring Republicans in and negotiate with them. And therefore, the American public will see that he's being bipartisan, and Joe Manchin will decide that, no, I'm no longer in politics just to enrich myself. Yeah, it didn't work out quite that well. Joe Biden has, in really trying to sort of illustrate the idea of day late, dollar short, come out and said that he's endorsing a carve out to the filibuster for voting rights. And the bottom line is he's either got to, sort of start to lean on Joe Manchin in a substantive way, or nothing's going to happen. And good for voting rights activists. Folks like Stacey Abrams and other groups are just basically like, have fun in Georgia, but we're not going to be a prop for you.
Yeah.
And we are not going to invest our credibility that we have established in pursuing this for years so that you get a photo op. So you can do your speech and you could talk about the filibuster, but if you don't make it happen, then who cares?
I mean, that's significant. Stacey Abrams is running to be the governor of Georgia, and this would most Democratic politicians would show and get a photo op with Joe Biden, but like his position on this is so pathetic that she's not showing up.
And people should remember this: Joe Biden did the same thing that he did with Elizabeth Warren in 2016. He did it in 2020, which was float the idea that he's going to pick Stacey Abrams mm-hmm. as his VP candidate, which, if I remember correctly, Stacey Abrams was like, yeah, we haven't had that conversation. So my answer is we'll wait, you know, maybe, maybe not. And I imagine Stacey Abrams remembers that, too. Once bitten, twice shy. Is that right? Is that
Yes.
Or shame on me, shame on you, or whatever it is, George Bush.
Can't
shame
fool me again. Man,
can't fool again.
Can't fool again. But that's the bottom line. And so, you know, I guess it's news that he said that, but it really doesn't mean much unless there's actually some substance behind it.
And Sinema and Manchin already don't support, like, I mean, it... I don't. What bothers me most about this pivot too is that he's basically conceding Build Back Better's done. I mean, you touched on it earlier, but why are we moving on to the next thing if we're not done with, if we haven't put the final nail in the Build Back Better bill? Like, there needs to be, that needs to be the focus of the administration right now, I think. I mean, you can do two things at once, but the reason he's pivoting to this, in my opinion, is because,
well, part of it is
he thinks he needs a political win, and like he doesn't think Build Back Better is going to happen.
Well, it's not just that, because this bill purports to impact redistricting, or potentially could, and you need to get that done now, because that won't work 6 months from now, or 4 months from now, or even 3 months from now. Once those districts are set, you will have a hard time finding judges who are going to, you know, as you get closer to the election, reverse those redistricting. So there's also a clock on this bill. They thought they were going to get to this a lot earlier, but the Build Back Better, because they, you know, the way that Joe Biden marshaled this thing, and frankly, Chuck Schumer, they blew it.
You're right. It's just that you're not going to get Manchin to move on this if you already, like, gave him all of the power with Build Back Better.
Yeah, he's feeling his oats quite a bit. I just read some, like, ridiculous story in the Washington Post that poor Joe Manchin's caught between the coal mine owners and the coal miners themselves. He doesn't give a goddamn. Give me a break.
That's the party's predicament at large, basically.
That's him. That's just him, like, setting up, like, you know, his Sophie's Choice. Ridiculous.
It says a lot that that's put up as a choice, though. Like, it should be a no-brainer.
Hey, you would think it would be a no-brainer. Like, I mean, I think, you know, the coal owners, they've had a good run. They've had a pretty good run. They, you know... It's been 7 out of 7 years now have been the hottest on record in the world. Coal, you know, the coal people may be just like, how about let's just give them a soft landing? We've talked about this fire in the Bronx. 17 people died. Could be more by the time we are done. The vast majority of these people did not die from burns. The vast majority of these people died from smoke inhalation. And this is relevant, or I should say, it makes it a tragedy that could have been prevented, frankly. Here's... let's play this clip, and then Emma, you could talk about what is being reported about this building. Here is our new mayor, Eric Adams, and pretty soon we should be taking bets as to how long he manages to maintain his mayorality. But here he is at a news conference yesterday in the Bronx.
And if we take one message from this, that Commissioner Nigro has mentioned several times, close the door, close the door. That was embedded in my head as a child watching the commercials over and over again. We're going to double down on that message. My conversation with the Chancellor this morning. We're going to send out communications to all of our schools and state that we want our children to receive the same level of reinforcement. Muscle memory is everything. And if we can drill that in, we can save lives by closing the doors, not only in this city, but across the entire globe. This painful moment can turn into a purposeful moment as we send the right message of something simple as closing the door.
Now, this is so incredibly offensive.
Mm-hmm.
What he's talking about is, in New York City, there is a requirement that doors to apartments and doors that lead to hallways and stairways automatically close for this very reason. That when people are running from a fire, they don't have the muscle memory always to close the door.
Muscle memory is everything. Regulations and enforcement, that's kind of to the side.
Why in the world would Eric Adams not be there saying, this is why we have regulations in this city, and we are going to double efforts, triple efforts. In fact, forget about teaching all these kids muscle memory about closing the door after they're running from a fire. We have an apparatus in this city to enforce regulations that are there for safety. Emma, well, let's hear more about this landlord and exactly what they found here.
Well, so this landlord, by the way, you know, it's just a quick aside. It reminds me of when you're in school and they were teaching you about bomb threats and you were supposed to hide under your desk. Like, that muscle memory would have saved all of us if a bomb actually was dropped on the school. So the landlord was named Rick Groper. He was on the New York City mayor's transition team for housing. So he's closely associated with Eric Adams here, and
he's on the way. So this should be clear. He was on the transition team.
Transition team. Did that? I said that right?
Yes. Okay. I want people to understand. You don't get on the transition team just because you're an expert at being a landlord.
No, you are a wealthy landlord who wants to remain close to the mayor for reasons like this, where he can deflect blame onto the victims of this fire as opposed to onto you. So they're also, if you can go back, Bradley, to earlier on in this thread by Ania Kaysdallo. I totally butchered that, but there is a complaint history for this building, and this is just part of it, shows that there have been multiple complaints that there is no heat in the building.
Multiple from like December 2021.
Which is why that this person was likely using a space heater. But say the heat was working fine and the person just likes it a little toasty and they want to use a space heater. There also were other violations at this apartment complex, including with those very doors that Eric Adams was talking about there. So the building had multiple violations. The New York Post was reporting on this, and then Daily Beast backed them up, that inspectors had flagged that apartment block 6 times in 7 years for faulty self-closing doors. And it's also being reported that the sprinkler systems were faulty. This was a low-income area, and this landlord was cutting costs. And when you develop good relationships with powerful people like Eric Adams, things are let slide. Bradley, we were talking about this briefly before the show. I mean, this is commonplace. They are not held to account when they are close to power, and especially the apartment buildings are in areas like the Bronx. It's not going to the powers that be aren't going to pay attention. You just saw that work right there. You saw that work right there. The mayor just said, well, you should have had the muscle memory to learn how to close the door. Then maybe 17 people, including 8 children, would not be dead right now.
The fire department is also investigating reports, according to the Daily News, of a malfunctioning fire alarm system. Some stories that the alarm system went off regularly. In other words, when the systems go off regularly, what happens? When it goes off, people are less likely to respond to it.
You learn to disregard it like the boy who cried wolf sort of situation. Yeah, there's got to be consequences for stuff like this, and I don't know at what point it goes from like manslaughter to like social murder. But when you have multiple violations for this sort of stuff, and you're just letting it slide, and instead donating to political candidates, that's a huge problem.
Right. The message should not be that kids don't have the muscle memory to learn to shut the door after they run from a burning apartment. The lesson should be that we're going to redouble our efforts to punish people who look at these as these violations as just the cost of doing business. The whole point of having regulations like this are for safety. This is not, you know, the Landmark Preservation Department, you know, doesn't want air conditioners on the left side of the building because it doesn't look good. This is about preventing this exact type of tragedy. Children die, adults die because of smoke inhalation.
And we talk about the muscle memory of like what the tenants were likely trained to do. As Matt said, they were trained to, and you pointed out, they were trained not to pay attention to the fire alarm because the building, that's the muscle memory that they had. It's absurd that like there needs to be an investigation into manslaughter for like this entire group that owns this building, including Rick Gropper.
Yeah, it's sort of shocking to me that we don't have that we're not going to see something like that.
And this is going to be a completely insane tenure as mayor for Eric Adams, and this is just the beginning, as you mentioned. He's got a lot of skeletons in his closet, and he's actually bat crap crazy. So watch out.
Meanwhile, let's talk a little bit about what could be some decent news. We'll keep you updated on that as that goes. You know, as we watch that just get buried, I imagine, under a sea of people getting paid off. Good news out of New York State, potentially, and possibly out of California. It's going to take a while in California, and we've seen this on multiple occasions. But in New York State, there has been a dynamic that has existed. Now, right now during COVID, it's a little bit different because in one of the COVID relief bills, there was essentially a safe harbor for people who are eligible for both Medicare and Medicaid. But as you may or may not know, and we talked about this in the context of COVID, early in COVID, Cuomo administration cut Medicaid funding. And they do this because they don't want to have to raise taxes on wealthy people in this state. That's just the bottom line. There is a situation where if you are on Medicaid and you become eligible for Medicare over age 65, you are no longer often eligible for Medicaid. And that means that you lose some of the benefits that Medicaid gives, like dental, like stuff for eyes, vision care. And you are also subject to asset and income restrictions that may inhibit your ability to get Medicaid for, let's say, going into a nursing home. 2/3 of our elderly are in nursing homes paid for by Medicaid. People don't quite realize that, which is why we have, I mean, it's such an incredibly messed up system. So this is a problem for seniors and for disabled people. Hearing, vision, and dental care in particular. And long-term care, as in nursing homes. Kathy Hochul, the governor of New York, who came in after the disgraced former governor had to resign, Andrew Cuomo, is proposing, and she's the first governor, I think, in ages in New York that has even hinted at something like this. She would raise the maximum income that Medicaid beneficiaries are permitted to earn, and the same for savings. So in other words, you can only have a certain amount of assets in New York. I think right now it's like $15,000. If you have more than $15,000 worth of assets, you cannot be eligible for Medicaid. You can imagine how this starts to become a real dilemma for people who are right on the cusp there. There are these two proposals would allow as many as 200,000 additional low-income New Yorkers to access Medicaid coverage. And again, that would provide vision, dental, hearing, and long-term care to folks like that.
And we should also say that this is a strong departure from Andrew Cuomo, who was attempting to cut Medicaid.
Oh, he cut Medicaid.
And cut Medicaid.
During COVID.
Yes.
And now, right now, if you are on both on COVID, on Medicare and Medicaid in New York State, you are in basically a moratorium, as it were. But this would go, and the ACA expanded Medicaid eligibility. This would even take that even further. So we will see where this proposal goes. Sometimes these things have a tendency, in particularly in New York, probably everywhere, of sort of disappearing and melting away. But I've seen a bunch of different numbers that are being thrown around in terms of who it could provide health care to. It would reduce the number of uninsured New Yorkers by at least 14,000, and it would make health care more affordable for at least 92,000. So in terms of a change, it would be the biggest deal for folks, you know, sort of struggling with this since the Affordable Care Act expansion. Good news, at least it's a step in the right direction in terms of this concept that everyone should have health care.
Yeah.
We still have a Rube Goldberg system for all of this, as far as I'm concerned. But in terms of just sort of like providing some measure of material benefit, it's going to help anywhere from 20 to 90,000 New Yorkers. In California, there are two things going on. Gavin Newsom is proposing in his latest budget proposal to provide health care coverage to all immigrants in California. Right now, I think it's for immigrants in California under the age of 26 and 55 and older. And this is looking to expand it for everyone there. In the event that they're eligible under, Medicaid, or they would offer it through their exchange. There's also a group of Democrats in California that are introducing a bill for a form of single payer in California.
And Newsom, despite, I think in 2018, he was...
He ran on it.
He ran on single payer, but he basically said about this single payer proposal, his office respondent said, "Oh, I haven't read it yet." I'm sure that's the case.
The real question is going to be how much pressure is brought to bear on him on an election year on a guy who clearly has national designs.
Mm-hmm. And the pressure on the other side, because this is going to have to be approved by the voters, any single payer proposal, because it involves tax increases, the propaganda from the interest groups that are going to be affected by this the tax increases is going to be significant.
Significant. California has this law that they passed, and it may in fact be a constitutional amendment in California. And this is just off the top of my head, but it basically is that any type of tax increase the vast majority of the tax increase that you impose must go towards education, which makes it very hard for them to fund anything else. So this would involve a constitutional amendment that would allow for the taxation for a single-payer plan. The bottom line is this sets up essentially medical care providers against the nurses union in terms of big interest groups. And then, of course, there's the California people who, you know, they're just third parties to this.
Well, this is not a comment on people in particular, but the California voter base has shown they can be swayed by these well-funded propaganda campaigns in the past, most recently with, what was it, Prop 8? With the Uber?
Yeah.
I don't know
if that was 8, but it was
SB
42? I can't remember.
Proposition 8 was the gay marriage one.
But yes, the one which...
22.
Yeah, 22, exactly. This one is Assembly Bill 1400. It would create CalCare, system governed by an independent board of directors that would provide access to any doctor, regardless of network, in a wide variety of medical services. The new entity would push to bring payments to providers more in line with the cost of care. That's the problem. It would seek to negotiate lower prices for prescription drugs. So in other words, it would cut into the profits of the medical care providers. That's incidentally, at the end of the day, that is the big obstacle. I think for years, people just assumed it was the insurance companies. And I think the insurance companies obviously push back against this, but it really is the providers who are the bulwark of the anti-single payer, because they're the ones who are going to really lose in terms of some type of pricing discipline. Because right now it's like, imagine being the most uneducated person you could about cars and going in and taking it into the shop. And the owner of the shop comes out and goes like, we got to readjust your carburetor. And that's going to be, that's like a $1,500 job to recalibrate the carburetor. And of course, your brake shocks are going to needing replacement, and we're going to have to put a motor trend is also really well unbalanced. We're going to need to that's very expensive. I mean, that's basically the situation we're in right now.
Well done.
Thank you. Trying to prove point.
I got lost.
That's the point.
There.
If you look at like the medical pricing in this country, it's insane. And it's only because we don't know. Do I need an MRI for this? If you tell me I do, I do.
Yeah.
How many different, you know, doctors do I go to find out?
We all got to do our homework a little bit better, is what you're saying.
Yes, you all need to get medical degrees.
We need the muscle memory of inspecting our own medical issues.
Exactly. I mean, now you can look on YouTube and you can say, hey, wait a second. What is a motor trend? That's the name of a magazine. But you can't do that when it comes to medical stuff. It's not like a stereo. It's not like going into Twitter, et cetera. All right, let's play one. Should we play the Sarah Palin clip?
Okay.
Let's just play the Sarah Palin clip, and then we'll go into the fun half. Oh, this is pretty fun.
She wants to hold AOC accountable.
Yeah. Let me just remind you. It was St. John McCain who introduced this country, essentially, to Sarah Palin, elevated her. If you had any notion as to whether she would have become a Republican star on her own without being elevated by John McCain, all you need to do is look at her life since the time that she was the vice president nominee. I mean, she couldn't remain in office as a rising star. as someone who had been plucked out of obscurity to become the one of the closest people you could, like, just theoretically be to the presidency, right? The vice president of a guy who, well, I mean, he would have made it through his first two terms, assuming that the stress wouldn't have gotten to him. Maybe, but then, does she win in 2016?
Talking about muscle memory, he created the muscle memory for Trump by picking Sarah Palin.
Without a doubt.
She was the, you know, what, beta Trump, right?
Exactly. And, but here she is, still with us today, even years after her, one of her reality shows or multiple reality shows got canceled. Here she is on Fox News, Sarah Palin.
It amazes me, though, her and other liberals, socialists, even their ability to deflect from what the issues truly are. And here, her obsession with at least suggestions of them, always gender and sex, even it, you know, I truly believe that there are enough Americans who get it and understand what her tactic is. And that is to deflect from what the real issues are. But yeah, okay, take this issue, though, with her suggestion of dating and, you know, attraction to someone and blaming her failures on that. That obsession with sex. Look how the liberals, Rachel, want to pound that into the public's head, that advertising who is attracted to who, what people do in their own, the privacy of their own bedrooms, all those things that have to do with privacy and sex. The liberals, not the conservatives, are the one who pound after that. And obviously, it's a tactic so that she doesn't have to be held accountable. It sounds like she hasn't been held accountable for much. Maybe in her entire life, so she does not have that foundation of accountability and, you know, that public servant's heart that is so necessary in order to serve well and be accountable.
Yeah, I think you're right. It isn't
stuck the landing there.
Oh my God. Honestly.
Like, Sarah Palin's like, she needs to be taught a lesson. She's been bad.
Honestly, if
I'd like to teach her a lesson and pound
those lessons into her.
That's the thing with the liberals is that they just completely avoid the issues instead of talk about all this like pounding and sex stuff. And she never had any. She doesn't understand what it takes to do public service. Incidentally, I quit a year or two into my being governor because I realized like I wasn't going to be vice president and I didn't want to do all the work. And so I just thought like I should be a reality TV star.
Her hypocrisy. I mean,
honestly, like if you were to write that segment and be like, what, do you think there's a chance that we could get Sarah Palin to play herself in this and just do a bit where, like, she just, no, there's no way you'll get, oh, my God, she said yes.
Any actor would look at that script of words that Sarah Palin said there and be like, I can't perform that. What do you mean?
It's too on the nose.
Weird mental breakdown.
Oh, yeah. No. I think there's a couple of comedians who could pull that off. I definitely think that, like, but the problem is that it is, you need someone to pretend to be Sarah Palin to make that funny. Let's play that again.
I saw Tina Fey was trending this morning.
This is too good. I mean, understand she's just listen. Just remember where she ended up, where she landed. Yeah. And so at the beginning, you understand where she's going at this point. This is like, you know,
the moments of panic.
Trying to think of what TV shows you go back and you watch and go like, oh yeah, no, now I've seen the ending. Like, I can't believe this is where they started.
It amazes me, though, her and other liberals, socialists, even their ability to deflect from what the issues truly are. And here, her obsession with at least suggestions of them, always gender and sex, even it, you know, I truly believe that there are enough Americans who get it and understand what her tactic is. And that is to deflect from what the real issues are. But, yeah, okay, take this issue, though, with her suggestion of dating and, you know, attraction to someone. someone and blaming her failures on that. That obsession with sex. Look how the liberals, Rachel, want to pound that into the public's head, that advertising who is attracted to who, what people do in their own, the privacy of their own bedrooms, all those things that have to do with privacy and sex. The liberals, not the conservatives, are the ones who pound after that. And obviously, it's a tactic so that she doesn't have to be held accountable. It sounds like she hasn't been held accountable for much, maybe in her entire life, so she doesn't have that foundation of accountability and, you know, that public servant's heart that is so necessary in order to serve well and be accountable.
Yeah, I think you're right. Nailed it.
I like how they also, I wonder if like the host is going like, listen, just do me a favor. Give me about 10, 15 seconds before you cut back to me. And she's done talking because I honestly, guys, please don't mess with me today. Okay. Just give me a couple of seconds to gain some composure after she's done talking.
I think you're right, Sarah.
Yes, exactly, Sarah.
Exactly what I was going to say.
Four, three, two, one. We're back on you. Just so you know, the camera's on you. Okay, well, Sarah Palin, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for taking us to pound town.
Do you think that they honestly, like, I mean, you know, having just some experience with cable television, I got to put, even for someone working at Fox, the likelihood that they go to commercial break and everybody just goes, can you fucking believe that? Wow.
Yeah. Well,
why are we still going to her?
That's why we're going to her right there. Are you kidding?
What's interesting to me, too, about it is that Sarah Palin was also, like, AOC was critiquing, and she repeated what I think I've said on the show multiple times about, like, the right wing's just incredibly obvious, like, sexual frustration with Ocasio-Cortez, and they don't necessarily know what to do with it, and so they lash out against her in these
Out at her boyfriend's sandals.
Yeah, I mean, they're like, oh, he's, you know, they're critiquing his appearance because they're obsessed with her, like, physical appearance, and, like, they don't but she also makes them super angry with what she says, so they don't really know how to feel about it. But Sarah Palin was the flip side of that stuff. She actually capitalized on the weird right-wing repressed sexuality when she was a public figure. And so, like, the irony of her saying something like this is ridiculous because she tried to harness the obsessive, like, conservative, repressed Christian sexual nature.
There is no doubt. I mean, I cannot remember the specific people, but if you go back and look at Twitter in 2008, it was new, but the comments you were getting from right wing commentators and writers about Sarah Palin, they were just so over the moon.
Yes.
That they thought that she was so hot. And that the left couldn't handle it. I mean, it was amazing. It really was amazing.
Vanity Fair 2008. Sarah Palin, smart, scrappy, and oh yes, sexy.
Yeah, I mean, there was tons of that from right wingers.
Right.
Tons of it.
Yeah, I mean, I remember that was like the main, like, as someone who wasn't really following politics that closely, like, that was like the main thing people talked about her in North Dakota, at least.
It was.
That was the premise of the SNL skit with her and with Tina Fey playing her and Amy Poehler playing Hillary, where, you know, Hillary was unattractive and Sarah Palin was like, stop photoshopping my head on bikini bodies or whatever. She was like, her attractiveness to conservatives was one of the number one things about her. And then she's trying to claim that it's the left that's obsessed with sexuality and politicians. Oh, my God.
Folks, we're going to head into the fun half of the program. You can call us at 646-257-3920. You can IM us by picking up the app at majorityapp.com. It can be part of the program. It is also your support that not only supports the free half of the show, but then gets you the fun half every day delivered in your podcast or your podcast server, whatever you call those. I don't know. I've only been doing this for 11 years. So just working down the sales pitch.
My podcast server.
Podcast server. You want to come to our live show in May in Boston at the Wilbur Theater? Do so by going to MajorityLive.com or MajorityReportLive.com. Check it out. Matt, what's happening in the Matt Leckian media universe?
So go check out the John Milton Areopagitica episode of Literary Hangover, talking about the classic free speech text from 1644, and also about John Milton's history as a polemicist, including his... What did I say?
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. That was the main thing about John Milton. The whole... the thesis of the episode is that he's misunderstood mainly as a poet, but all of his works are extremely political. And so we go over some of his prose works, including The Tenure of Kings and Magistrates, written during the lead-up to Charles I's execution and published after it, saying, yes, we can execute kings if they don't serve the people, and a few of his other prose works. So
Don't tread on me.
I heard polygamist.
That's not John Milton, but a polygamy?
That's what I heard. I heard polygamist. Not polemicist.
He was not a polygamist, but he was accused of libertinism, Emma. So.
Okay, there you go. Because I was like, that is in line with what you said yesterday, but I misheard you. All right. Never mind.
Sex on the brain.
I'm on the left, right? I can't stop thinking about
pounding,
it.
Pounding. Nomi's not with us today. We will see you in the fun half.
Is best.
Jamie and I may have a disagreement.
Yeah, you can't just say whatever you want about people just because you're rich.
I have an absolute right to mock them on YouTube.
He's up there buggy whipping like he's the boss.
I am not your employer.
You know, I'm tired of the negativity.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to upset you. You're nervous, you're a little bit upset, you're riled up.
Yeah, maybe you should rethink your defense of that, you fucking idiots.
We're just going to get rid of you.
All right.
But dude. You want to smoke this joint?
Yes.
Do you feel like you are a dinosaur?
Good shit.
Exactly. I'm happy now.
It's a win-win.
It's a win-win-win.
Oh, hell yeah.
Now listen to me. 2, 3, 4, 5 times. 847-906-501-457. 2, 38, 56, 27. 1/2, 5/8, 3.9 billion.
Wow.
He's the ultimate math nerd.
Don't you see?
Why don't you get a real job instead of spewing vitriol and hatred, you left-wing Limbaugh?
Everybody's taking their dumb juice today.
Come on, Sammy.
Dance, dance, dance.
Ooh. Grandpa.
I had my first post-coital scene with a woman. I'm hoping to add more moves to my repertoire. All I have is the dip and the swirl.
Fine, we can double dip.
Yes, this is a perfect moment.
No.
Wait, what?
You make under $1 million a year. You're scum. You're nothing.
Excuse me? Fuck you, you fucking liberal elite. I think you belong in jail.
Thank you for saying that, Sam. You're a horrible, despicable person.
All right, gonna take a quick break. I want to take a moment to talk to some of the libertarians out there. Take whatever vehicle you want to drive to the library. What you're talking about is jibber jabs.
Classic. I'm feeling more chill already.
Good.
Donald Trump can kiss all of our asses.
Hey, Sam. Hey, Andy. You guys ready to do some evil?
Hitler was such an idiot.
I think I might be a Nazi.
Agree.
No.
Death to America.
Do.
Yes.
Wow.
Wow, that's weird. No way! Unbelievable. This guy's got a really good hook.
Throw our hands up.
Ooh. Wow.
But Sam, I gotta get off.
No worries. I wanna just flesh this out a little bit. I mean, look, it's a free speech issue. If you don't like me...
Hey, shut up!
Thank you for calling into the Majority Report. Sam will be with you shortly.